Welcome to the Debrief Show, where leaders come to bring out the best in themselves, their teams, and their communications. I'm Dee Clayton, your host and multi-award-winning leadership coach and communication fanatic. Joining us this time is motivation guru, Susanna Braid-Waring, and we're going to be talking about why succession plans might fail and what we can do about it. She's going to be reminding us that there's three parties involved in succession planning: the organisation, the existing leader, and the successor, and each needs to be motivated to make it happen all at the same time. Welcome to the show, Susanna. How are you?
I'm really, really good. Thank you, Dee.
Fantastic. Welcome to the show and our lovely co-host, Will Grover. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much for asking.
Brilliant. Well, today's topic is all about succession planning and why they might fail without us even knowing about it. And Susanna's an expert on motivation and succession planning. She's going to talk to us about that, which I'm really looking forward to. Even the pre-chat, I'm like thinking this is going to be great. So, you know, the problem is some people have succession plans and they won't know if they're going to fail yet until they actually do it. So they think, oh, I'm sitting pretty and got a lovely page of A4 and it's all great. But maybe Susanna's going to tell us about why we might have a few watch outs there. Or maybe you've motivated some people into sort of taking the job, but then they take the job and they're sitting there and they're not motivated. It isn't exactly what they thought it was going to be. And then she's going to help us see what we can do about that. And also, it's really important to grow future leaders internally. Lots of the people we work with, Will, are super passionate about that rather than external recruitment. And that's a great idea, but how do we do it properly? So, Susanna, I met you 9 years ago. I got accredited in Motivational Maps, which is one of your many amazing tools. So it seems to have flown by. So, but it's lovely to have you on, and thank you very much for your time. So I'm going to hand over to Will with the first question for you.
Yeah, super. Well, look, we could unpack that 9 years since you qualified, but you've clearly had quite a journey, lots of experience. I'm just fascinated to find out how you got involved in this work around leadership and motivation.
Yeah, thank you, Will. I came about it really because I hadn't been taught how to lead, how to manage, and actually understanding people was just something that didn't really compute in my mind. So I was more a little bit more introvert, a bit more gravitated more towards the figures and the facts, and people are more of an art than a science, and a little bit more unpredictable. And so in my work, I ended up being, I started off just doing kind of admin and then going into basically any job that weren't being done in this particular organization that I joined. And then ended up being the finance director, which then involved being the HR director, the IT, the commercial, any business improvement project, or the ISO standards, all of those are the kind of things. And I loved making a difference. I loved helping to develop the business engine that helped to grow the business. And I loved to be able to make improvements. But of course, all of that change involved engaging people. And whilst I cared a lot about people, I just didn't really understand people or understand why people did certain things. And I was furiously learning about my own personal development. You know, big fan of Dale Carnegie and Stephen Covey, and then really experimenting on my team as well to kind of go out, does this work and does this work? And then eventually when we did a management buyout of that organization, I decided not to be an ongoing shareholder. It was in the environmental technology field, which basically means sewage treatment. So we're making plant and big plant for treating sewage and actually creating methane and sustainable energy, working for the big civil engineering contractors. And we would employ mechanical, electrical, process engineers, and then work with civil engineers, quantity surveys, etc. So my heart wasn't in the technology. My heart actually was then in the people. And going, right, with everything that I've done, and I put invested in people in place and everything else, but I still didn't feel like I was an expert in people. And so I wanted to come out, try and do my own thing and to help other business leaders to be more successful without all the headaches that I had, hence the name Aspirin Business.
I wondered where that came from. So thank you for explaining it. And I'm sure that there's many leaders who are watching this now are going to watch it in the future, who feel like they've got a pretty good idea about what to do in their business, how to run their business. But what do you think some of those leaders might be missing about motivation and succession in particular, even if they think they're pretty darn good at their jobs?
For me, it's the emotional side. So I was great at putting a plan together and going, wow, that's fantastic on paper. And then you start trying to involve people and engage people. And what you really want as a leader is for people to own it and for them to start taking it and moving it forward without you having to chase it all the time. And that's the motivation piece, really. So I think in terms of what a lot of people are missing is all of the emotional factors that go on, especially around succession planning. Because when it comes to succession planning, and I've been part of a number of processes around business leaders exiting or people just moving on in their role to something else and needing to bring somebody else in, there are all those emotions around the organization needing to be ready and to be willing to recruit and to invest and to support the person moving on. The person moving on needs also to be ready to move on, because motivation is really interesting and it's incredibly powerful. There's lots of data to show how much it affects performance as well as behavior, but also motivation is invisible. So we don't really know what's going on with motivation, but there is a towards motivation. So towards motivation is creating something that doesn't yet exist, like the facility to be able to do podcasts. Someone had to be motivated to create that. And there's an away from motivation, which is when there's something that we know about and we're avoiding it. So when it comes to moving on, people sometimes are moving away from a really tiring job where they're now exhausted, but they don't always have a motivating picture where they're moving towards. And so there's a hesitation to move forwards, but also they don't particularly want to drive their role and the organization forward because they're tired. So it's all the emotional piece around that. And of course, you get the same thing with the person who's stepping into the role. There's an assumption that they'll want to progress, they'll want to grow, they'll want to take responsibility. But do they?
Yeah, I suppose there's that other gap there. If you're sitting underneath that level that might be moving on, and you see somebody who's stressed out, tired, had enough, what's the motivation then to step up into those shoes and take on all that stress onto your own shoulders? Fascinating.
Exactly that, you know, because again, that's an away from motivation. So we're going, actually, that just looks like something and that I don't want to be involved in. And also, I don't want to be the kind of person that I think I need to be in order to actually manage. You know, so you look at that person, how they manage, and we think we have to manage in the same way.
And you've done some research on that, haven't you, with looking at all these maps in the past. And I know you did an article, which we'll share actually. Following on from this, if people sign up to our newsletter, we'll share a link to that article because it was fascinating about how some people who might be in our succession plans don't actually want to move up in the standards way. Tell us a bit more about that research, please.
Yes, well, the research actually was done by James Sale, who is the creator of Motivational Maps. And so that is taking these... the research of over 110,000 motivational maps, and that identifies what motivates us the most and the least and how motivated across the various industries, etc. And the results are no surprise to me because I've been doing this for 15 years now with motivational maps. And so what we know in terms of what people are moving towards is making a difference, which of course I love because that's what motivates me. I know I'm sure it motivates the two of you as well, because that's why you do what you do. And so people are also moving towards security and towards knowledge, but what they're moving away from, because it's the motivators they will choose the least, are that authority, taking responsibility for other people, and also visibility. And when you think about actually stepping into succession planning, you need to want, be motivated to take on the responsibility for others, for the decisions, for the resources, for the strategy. And you also need to be willing to be visible, which means people can take a pot shot at you. And that's why most people are not motivated to be visible.
We were talking about younger generation not really wanting that. We were just talking about that before we went live, weren't we, about the younger generation. So is it an age thing, or is it just a trend thing, or is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both. I mean, it's an age thing, a trend thing, because I think the trend goes with the age. I do think there's a lot more options. So if you go back to I'm a bit older than you two. So to my parents' generation, it was all about post-war. So coming out of post-war, it was all about stability and security in the big corporations. And so there was an expectation that that's what you would do in order to actually succeed in the world. You join an organization, and both of my parents went into working for the public sector. So being a nurse, and they're going into wastewater or water industry, and then you would have a career for life. Of course, now what we know is that those jobs don't provide a career for life, that we end up having this schism between who we think that we need to be and who we want to be. And certainly our parenting, our expectations around our relationships with our families have changed during those generations. How my parents were parented and how they parented me is different to how I parent my children. And also that work-life balance, and definitely the younger generation, they see how hard we have worked and the hours and the dedication. And that for us was just an expectation, right? It was an expectation where they're going, we now have more choices. And of course, that's been accelerated through COVID with the adaptation of technology, the ability to work from home, the flexibility. This idea of having a portfolio of careers is normal for them. And this sort of side hustle and this creative thing on the side. So they are very much more, not just open to it, but the expectations are going, I can have a lot more choices. That also makes it hard. They're not quite sure what they wanted to do, what they want to be.
Brilliant. And so going back to succession plans, then there's some emotional barriers to people. So, you know, there's often this, I want to move up, if they do want to move up, but then there's someone else who's blocking, maybe because they've got this job for life and they literally take that literally and they're staying there because they don't know what else to do, not necessarily retire, but they could go and do a project or whatever, but they're staying there. So then that blocks the succession plan. I'm not sure if there's a real normal term for that, but that's sort of how some people can see it. What are the motivations or the emotions, not motivations, what are the emotions to people moving on, or the barriers to people moving on?
So when I was looking after HR, especially in those early days, there was a fixed retirement age. So everyone knew this was coming. Mm. And so there was a plan around it. And of course, that was then removed, which then means that people are, they want to move on. Without a doubt, it gets to a point where we get tired, and the amount of change and the volatility, and also the reliance, and not just reliance on IT, but the opportunity that technology and AI can create, that people who are much older, approaching retirement age, are also thinking, maybe I'm not the best person to be able to take this forward and to grow it. At the same time, they're having to think about their identity, which very much can be tied up in their role. Their relationships are also tied up in their role and the friendships, and maybe with customers they've known for a long time and people in the industry for a long time. That sense of security, of having a routine, of knowing what they're doing, of having that income coming in as well. And of course, you know, we think about pensions and how pensions and the markets all being affected as well in terms of the pension values, also very, very volatile. So this is all about going, I know what I have right now. And whilst there are some things that are uncomfortable right now, I know what I have. I'm not sure what I'm moving into. And will I then become someone who actually doesn't have a purpose, doesn't have friends, becomes lonely, doesn't have significance, doesn't have any relevance in the world anymore? So it's a real challenge to actually, for people to want to move on unless they are actually inspired and have a really good picture of what they want to do and are excited about where they want to move on to.
There's so much to think about, clearly. Other than people just walking around with a billboard of all their likes, wants and desires and fears and all the rest of it, there are obviously tools out there that can help us to understand this and literally map it out. So it's been mentioned a few times. Talk to us a little bit more about motivational maps, what they do, how they reveal different insights, maybe how they work differently from other tools that some people might have heard of already.
Yeah, lovely. There are lots of different tools that enable us to have a better understanding of who we are, our self-awareness. And motivation maps is one of those tools. And very often it's complementary to some of the ones that people will have heard of, like the personality profiles, insights, MBTI, etc. Motivation maps are the tool that I wish I'd had when I was managing my team, because I think a personality profile would have given me some information as to why they were different, why they were similar, the communication styles, but they wouldn't necessarily help me to understand why the same person behaved differently on a Monday to how they behaved on a Wednesday and a Friday. And it was when I found the motivational maps and how that links into Maslow's hierarchy of needs and these different emotional needs that it really helped me to build a bigger picture. And of course, having this background in finance, I love the numbers and the story the numbers can tell, and therefore having a tool is what I call a mirror, but I actually call it a puddle, because a puddle is a bit more distorted than a mirror. And when we're looking into this tool, and actually it's a self-perception inventory, so it's a tool that people, it's their own reflection on who they are. It's an ISO-accredited tool as well, and I wrote a paper about the validity and the reliability of this tool just a few months ago. I did a podcast for the Association of Coaching, if anyone wants to dive into the reliability and validity of it. But it is a like this puddle that we can look into. And for me, it's a conversation piece. So it's about saying, which bits do you recognize? Which bits do you not? Which bits do you disagree with? And then we're curious then about what it says and how is that true? How does that relate to what they're thinking, feeling, and how does it relate to what they're doing? And so there are 9 different motivators which fit with Maslow's hierarchy. So we go from the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy around being safe and secure, and then wanting to belong, and then wanting to feel valued as an individual, and then moving through to having influence, to the importance of money, which is not just money. It's an enabler of security, of freedom, of belonging, and then having knowledge, and then going through to the what we call the blue growth motivators, which are around innovation, experimentation, freedom, autonomy, and then finally to be making a difference as well. So 9 different motivators. Most people have 3, which are their top motivators, which is why you get that combination. And it's that combination of where they complement each other, where they can conflict with each other. And they tend to have one that is least important. So when we were talking earlier on about visibility, this kind of the star motivator, which is about feeling valued. So it's actually really important in terms of employee engagement, because everyone wants to feel valued by the people they value. For some of us, that's just 1 or 2 people. For others, that is thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, which is why we have movie stars, you know, who love it. And thank goodness for them. But of course, when it comes to being a leader or a manager, we need to be seen. And as a coach and a trainer, if we're going to make a bigger difference, we need people to look at us and to be paying attention. And so we have to get comfortable with people looking at us and paying attention. It means we're doing a good job, but it means we have to be comfortable in ourselves of being visible. And then the same thing with the manager. And they're typically, the data says, the 2 motivators which are the least important about all the motivators, even for leaders and managers. So the things we would want the least.
Yeah, I can tell that this is the reason why there are experts in this thing, because there's a lot to juggle. Best laid plans. Sounds like it's great to have a plan in place, and that's why you have such success with what you do. But sometimes surprises happen in the corporate world. What happens when somebody's already been promoted and now they're just really not keen or motivated to lead people?
So I think the first question is to go, what might indicate that they're not motivated to lead people? That would be around the behaviours and the outcomes. And so it's quite tricky to have a conversation which goes along the lines of, what I'm not seeing is you having these challenging conversations. What I'm not seeing is this. And what I am seeing is your team actually not performing or not behaving in the way that we would want them to behave, etc. That's quite a tricky conversation. Having a tool, you know, whether it's motivational maps or a different tool, enables both people to sit down together and go, actually, let's have a look at what's kind of, you know, going on and what motivates you and what doesn't motivate you and how does that influence your work. Enables you to have a much more open, honest, constructive conversation, and then to go, right, so what do you need? Because typically with our lowest motivators, so if we acknowledge that the majority of people, they are not motivated to take responsibility for other people, for the big decision, for the strategy, If we go, we just take that as read, it goes, right, how do we actually help you to do the behaviours that are associated with that motivator?
Right.
Such as all of those things I just talked about. How to make that easier for you? And of course, part of the reason for the way of making it easier will be about leadership and management development, putting structures in place, really clear ways of working, some consistency around decision making. And then how do we also remove some of the irritations, so these hygiene factors? So people also talk about going, it's all the meetings, it's all the bureaucracy. It's I'm really busy, but I go to a meeting and there's no agenda, there's no outcome, lots of conversations. Or I can't get buy-in to a decision, so I can't just crack on and get it done. So if we can help people to actually do the behaviours that we want of them, and they will be motivated not because they want responsibility, but because they want to make a difference, because they want to actually help other people, because actually they want to be able to use their expertise, etc. And then how do we actually take away the irritations that are associated with it, that it just makes managing and leading easier for them to do and for them to be able to use that to achieve what they actually want to achieve.
Magical place to work. Let's all go and work for that organisation. Yeah, fantastic. So, you know, I was talking earlier about internal talent being so important to grow, isn't it? So how do you do that? So if you're just at the beginning and you haven't done all these motivational maps yet, and you don't know everything that Susanna knows, how do you go about it? There's some steps that need to be taken, or a couple of watch outs, or how do you go about it?
So there's that old question is, what if I train them and they leave? And my philosophy is to be more of a multiplier. So there's a fantastic book called Multipliers, and it has this contrast between people who are multipliers and grow leaders, and people who are diminishers and build empires, and therefore they break down the confidence. So people stay, but they underperform, but they are diminished. When you are a multiplier, you grow managers, you grow leaders. Some of those will hatch, they will peak before you are ready, and you have to be willing to let them go. That's the deal. You have to be willing to let them go to move on. And then you're growing the next set and the next set. And at some point, those timelines between when you're ready to actually promote them and somebody is, because when you're growing as an organization, it's easy because there are new positions, therefore you can promote. When you're more static or when you're consolidating, those positions to be promoted are much, much smaller and fewer. And so within that, you're going to lose some talent. But if you've got this pipeline of talent, you don't have to worry about it. And then what will happen with this mindset of being a multiplier is you will get a reputation for developing talent, for giving people opportunities, for actually being a place where you nurture people. And so you will attract great candidates who will come. They will work with you. They'll give more than 100% because as they're learning and they're motivated, they will keep going the extra mile. And then they'll move on. They'll create space and you'll get this reputation. So that for me is the first bit is going, you have to create a pipeline of people who actually want to come in. And then also you have to be working then with the people who are exiting or moving on to help them to work out where they want to move on to. So we've actually got a client who we're seeing on the other side, we're not their employers, but he's already working on his plan for where he wants to go next. And when I work with someone like that, I am always about, whenever you're working for an organization, you need to honor your commitment to that organization. And so don't take your foot off the pedal. Don't start, not doing your job. Yes, be inspired and excited about where you're going now. Actually use where you're working now to build your connections, to build your trust, to build your experience in whatever it is that you're going on to next. So you're excited about that, but equally honor your commitment and create this legacy before you move on. So it's having that incoming and outgoing.
Yeah. And if you've been honest about it, if the manager has created a safe environment for you to say that, look, I'd like to do it in this organization, but you haven't got the space, so I'm going to move on when I'm ready in 6 or 12 months' time. I mean, that sounds quite scary for some people to do that. But if it was a safe environment to do that, then they can support you, can't they, in doing that? And you can all, and they might come back in a couple of years as well, right? But I think it's often not a safe environment. So people suddenly leave. But of course, they don't suddenly leave. They've been planning it for ages, but it's sudden to the manager because it's almost like a, Yeah, a taboo. We're not allowed to say that we might work for another company.
It's terrifying because, of course, when we get into that position where we're getting close to an age where we want to retire, then we're also thinking, and we know from the data, it's very difficult to be able to get a new job. And we're thinking, well, who's going to want to hire us at this age as well? So, of course, we're clinging on to the existing job for as long as possible until we're ready. And I talk about being in a boat, until we're ready to get out of the boat. So we're hanging on to this position in the boat, and we don't want someone to come in and get into our boat who maybe is too talented, because then maybe they will show us up as being outdated or having less relevance. And also maybe we'll get made redundant. So if we don't feel safe, we will hang on to our knowledge. We won't collaborate. We won't share. We're not going to actually develop a really good handover and capture the knowledge, this knowledge transfer, to be able to put it down into systems and processes. We're not going to do that because there's a real fear we're going to be made redundant. So when we have this place to move on to, we will do that. But as you say, we'll do it in a psychologically safe way.
Yeah, so you're saying we need to be aware of mapping the person whose job was who's already got the job, who's moving on, as well as, yeah, because I think most people would think about just looking at the person who's going up, so to speak. And they probably wouldn't be looking so much at the motivation of the person who should be leaving, but they leaving or moving sideways or doing a project. Yeah. But yeah, that needs more attention probably in most organisations. So, oh gosh, we've nearly come to the end of our time. Tell us just quickly, what actions could the listeners take? Let's say they've been motivated from today's session. Let's hope so. What actions would you suggest they take?
So exactly as you say, it needs to be preparation by the three different parties. So the organisation needs to be creating a culture where this is part of the conversation. And we're talking about not just an appraisal, not just a development plan, but actually a career path which might be beyond this organisation as well. So that's a very open, honest conversation. And so when it's about, as you say, ideally, what I will do is to do a motivation map, certainly to have conversations with the person who is either exiting or moving into the next role, to understand what they want for their new role, to help them get equipped for it. Because when we move from one role, we delegate, we let go of all the stuff that we are known for, all the stuff that we are good at, all the stuff that we have a reputation for, and we're moving into the uncertain and all that stuff that actually we're not good at. And we might be rubbish at that, and that might ruin our reputation. So we have to be supported to be able to move into this new role with excitement. And then we have to be involved in the conversation around where would you like your existing role to go for, you know, move on? How can they actually build on what you have already built? Then we would map or have conversations with the upcoming person as well. To understand, are they a culture fit? So not just are they a motivational fit, but are they a culture fit? Are actually they going to grow with the business, and are their ideas and their ways of working, of engaging the team, do they fit with the way that you want them to actually lead that team going forward? So it's about having these more open and honest conversations. And when you can keep doing that, you can also refine the timing to make sure it's ideal for everybody as well.
Imagine how stressful you feel if that happens. You know, if you're part of that process, just even talking about it, I'd feel, gosh, the company really value me. They really want to keep me. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that I hadn't in my corporate life. I hadn't had any of those kind of conversations, certainly not many. So I think that they would feel so valued from that. I think we could carry on talking for hours and hours, but I know we've only got you for a certain amount of time. So we really appreciate that. That's really kind. Thank you very much for your time. And we're come back to say goodbye in a moment. But before we do that, I've got a challenge for our listeners, really, to ask them to take an action, to encourage them, motivate them into taking action. So our question, Will and I are known for our questions at the end, which is, what steps will you take to increase your succession success? So is there one or two, you don't have to do it all at once, one or two easy wins or low-hanging fruit? What could you do to improve your succession plan and the likelihood that it will be successful? That's our challenge for you. And also, if you would like to subscribe to the Debrief newsletter, as we mentioned earlier, what we do is we pick out some of the key moments from what Susanna's been telling us. So we can pick out some of those. You can share it with your colleagues. But also, we're putting a link to two articles that would talk about the research and also talk about succession planning that Susanna's kindly allowed us to share with you guys. So please sign up to that newsletter and then we can share those articles with you along with some information about what's coming up next week as well. So next week, we've got a special guest also called Maggie Sappho, and she's going to talk to us about EQ and it being important in AI. So it's interesting, Susanna, that you have already said about AI and people feeling like as sort of some of the older generation, of which I would say I'm part of now, but you know, we might feel threatened or scared or whatever by new technology. And even when the other week when we were talking about hybrid, working in a hybrid way, all these ways of working are so different for some of us in the older generation, whatever that is. And so it's about bringing that one's about bringing EQ into the adoption of AI. So that's fascinating as well. All of these things are connected, aren't they?
Yes, so they are. You know, listen, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And Alana, really great session. Thank you for your comment there. If you have any other questions, please do pop them into the chat. It's been lovely. Thank you for joining us live. Thank you, Susanna. Thank you, as ever, Will. And thank you to our live listeners and those of you that are watching on Catch Up too. You can still ask questions in the comments and we will always get back to you. We really appreciate you joining us. So thank you for listening into the show. You'll find more information in the show notes. And if you want to listen to more episodes, please do. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And if you want to watch us in action, you'll find us on YouTube. Just search for my channel, D Clayton, and look for the Debrief shows. Thanks for joining us then. And until next time, keep bringing out the best in yourself, your teams, and your communications.